To be happy about serving us, you mean?
Among other things, yes.
Still on unsure ground, Wilhuff fell silent for an even longer moment.
Will you be taking me there? To the carrion?
He asked finally. His father narrowed his eyes when he smiled.
Not me. Someone else will come for you when the time is right.
A more delicate, impressionable child might have lived in fear of that day, but to Wilhuff the threat of sudden change, the abrupt undermining of his effortless life, and the need to forge his own future eventually became a promise, a parable, an adventure on which he yearned to embark, made real in his imagination long before it actually came to be. The day arrived shortly after his 11th birthday. Wilhuff was, by then, a ship-shaped kid burning with desire for bigger things, already something of a dreamer, an actor, an exaggerator. He was seated with his parents for the evening meal. The litany of harsh reminders was about to commence when three men, looking as if they had just crawled out from beneath a mine collapse, barged through the front door and into the dining room. Tracking mud across the polished stone floors, they began to stuff the pockets of their ragged long coats with food snatched from the dinner table. When Wilhuff looked to his suddenly silent parents, his mother only said,
"They've come for you."
But if his parents and the three intruders thought they had taken him by surprise, he had one of his own in store for them.
"First, I need to get my gear," he said, hurrying up the curving stairway as expressions of puzzlement began to form on the faces of the uninvited guests.
The looks were still in place when he returned a moment later, dressed in cargo pants and a multi-pocketed vest he had stitched together in secret over many weeks. Dangling from his neck was a pair of macro binoculars that had been a birthday gift. His gear, his outfit, his uniform, for when it would be needed. Scanning Tarkin from head to toe, the tallest and grimiest of the three launched a short laugh that shook the anteroom chandelier. Then he stepped forward to take the boy by shoulders that would remain bony and narrow throughout his life, shaking him as he said, "That's a beauty, it is. A uniform fit for a future hero. And you know what? It'll look even better with blood on it." His father stepped forward to say, "Wilhuff, meet my father's brother, your grand-uncle Jova." Jova grinned down at him, showing even teeth, whiter than Wilhuff would have expected considering his uncle's dirt-streaked face. "Time to go," Jova announced. So, whisked from his home without a reassuring embrace from either parent, the two of them standing instead in each other's arms, expressions of sad resolve on their faces, this was something he needed to experience. And through the gate into Iriadu's pitch-black pall, safe for the moment within the uniform, exhilaration stifling the hunger he was already feeling. Whisked not only from the manicured grounds, but also from the city itself in an aged airspeeder, on a shaky flight across the finger-shaped bay and up into the hills beyond to follow the meandering Orineswa River to a region he had never known to exist on his home world, one that seemed more the stuff of holodramas and escapist literature. An untamed expanse of flat-topped mesas separated by surging boulder-strewn rivers, and in the far distance, volcanic mountains that were perhaps still active. Even more shocking was Jova's explanation that while vast areas of Iriadu were much like this one, everything the boy's wide blue eyes could take in from horizon to horizon was family land, Tarkin land, procured 20 generations earlier and never allowed to fall into the hands of developers, miners, or anyone with designs on the region. A protected place and more. A natural monument, a reminder of what the planet could devolve into should sentient beings lose their grip and surrender their superiority to nature, to savagery. For young Wilhuff, a place of initiation, and central to it all, the Carrion Plateau. A rickety speeder, listing to one side because of a faulty repulsor lift, carried them up onto the tabletop summit. Wilhuff, Jova, two other headclothed elders, and a pair of elderly Rhodians who worked as guides, caretakers, trackers,
All six of them perched atop the ailing machine, and Will Huff's five keepers carrying long-barreled slug throwers. His hunger partially staved by dried meat almost too tough to swallow, Will Huff was beginning to have serious misgivings, though he refused to let them be known. This was a much darker and more dangerous place than the one his imagination had conjured. Fixed on masking his unease and on seeing an actual animal in the wild, he sat with the macro binoculars glued to his eyes as the speeder navigated immense stretches of grassland and forest, passing thick bulbs.